This is Beyond the Pass, conversations with people from all walks of hospitality life. Centering mental health, Beyond the Pass is a conversation about life, hospitality, and what makes us get out of bed each day. Beyond the Pass is brought to you by Kelly's Cause, and the conversational digressions are brought to you by me, your host, Rachel Kerlapsley. If you can take a minute to like, rate, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, that would be very much appreciated. Without listeners like yourselves, we couldn't keep having these brilliant conversations. Enjoy the episode and keep taking care of each other. Welcome back to Beyond the Pass. We're so excited to be sitting down with Sophia Gasnet. Sophia has 2 decades of hospitality experience spanning basically every role that can be done. She is currently the head of HR at Hawksmoor and the founder of Culture Bar, which facilitates hospitality-specific training focused on women's safety, anti-harassment and bullying, DEI, and much, much more. Welcome, Sophia.
Oh, thank you. Lovely to be here.
I just want to start by asking how you started out in the industry.
So I was about 15, and my mom's cousin was running the restaurant bar in the Malmö Opera. So I started working with her to earn extra money, basically, working in the restaurant for the opera. And I loved it. And then went on to waitressing in the summers to make money. So, yeah, so it's a long 23 years ago.
What was your favorite thing about it? And what was your least favorite thing about it?
I think one of my favorite things with the restaurants was the pace. It was the problem solving, it was the people. And it was just such an exciting world. And also, there's this funny thing with, you know, when you see a door with a staff only, I felt like I was part of like a club when you went behind the scenes. I wanted to know how everything worked. So I loved that. I loved the people. And obviously the food and drink was a massive bonus, but it was just a lifestyle that really spoke to me, not having to sit in front of a laptop every single day.
What was your least favorite thing about
it? I think it kind of came in waves, but I think when I was younger, the biggest thing I didn't like was the harassment and abuse that you experienced. But it was always just part of the job. That people were expecting you to take that abuse. I found it was very confusing when you're 17 years old and you have managers trying to touch body parts to compare who's got the biggest during shifts. And I never liked that. And then I suppose another thing when I got older was the relentless weeks. So when I was opening restaurants, you could do 90 hours in a week, which I think is a little bit too much.
Yeah, I think you may have overdone it a little. When did you sort of realize that it was your career? Like before you sort of transitioned into people roles, but you were just on the floor, were you like, oh, I guess this is what I do now. I guess this is my profession.
I think because I've always loved hospitality and everything that came with it. I was working my way in management roles, and so I was an openings manager and opened about 3 restaurants at that point, and I was an operations manager. And I wanted to have more work-life balance, but I wanted to continue to be with hospitality people because they're the best people you'll find. You find people from all over the world who are so incredibly talented. It felt like the natural step to go back to school and move into HR so that I could continue to be in a profession I loved and kind of being part of like creating great jobs for great people.
When you sort of measure up what you saw happening and then as you were transitioning into an HR and people role, were there people sort of dotted around your professional life where it was like, oh, I've experienced like this kind of harassment for managers, or I've seen shit like this in operations, or I've seen people working 90 hour weeks or whatever and the impact that's had. But I'm looking over there and I'm like, oh, it can be like that. And I can be a part of that.
So it's a bit corny, but it was actually Hawksmoor was one of the things that I was looking at. They had, well, they, we still have work hard and be nice to people. And I was always so in awe of their training program, of the way they were looking after their people, and the quality that they provided. So I actually did my studies based around Hawksmoor whilst I was still at the old company. And it just seemed like there is a better way of doing it, like the management development programs they were having. So that was what I was striving to, and that was what I was hoping for where I was working before. As corny as that is, but that's when I decided I should just work at Hawksmoor then.
When did you get introduced to women's safety training? And did you immediately sort of know, like, oh, the industry needs this?
I think it was just one of those things that came a lot in operations when I was doing it, because we were witnessing so many incidents happening at the bars and restaurants I was working at the moment. And when I came over to Hawksmoor, I was given the opportunity to really pursue that in a different way. So in 2018, I started doing like bite-sized training, and there were some incredible people here that I was working with. Where you would do the training sessions, like during briefings, etc., to try and make a tangible impact. So I immediately knew that it was something that was required and needed for the industry, and just helping people with how to deal with customers. Most customers are wonderful and amazing, but the few ones that aren't, it often catches you off guard. And I was just wanted to make sure that people had like that toolbox. So after COVID, we saw it was so many weird rules back then. But one of the things were that you had to have people out of the restaurant by 10. People went nuts. They were drinking. As they were sipping a cocktail, they ordered two more. And people were like spending money and getting very, very drunk in a very short amount of time. And after the long lockdown in 2021, we were just looking at it and going, we want people to be prepared for whatever's happening when we open again. And then Sarah Everard happened, Nicole Shellman, Biba Henry, all of these things were happening. And it was a very tough spring of 2021. I've always been really passionate about women's issues and wanting to make a change in that space. And it felt like that this was somewhere I could make a difference. So when I was building and doing the research to create this training, I came in contact with the Women's Night Safety Charter. And that just, everything just kind of perfectly fell into place. Where I could like create this training, delivering to hundreds of people at home on furlough, so that we were ready to whatever was going to happen. And it also, with women's safety, just understanding how everything is connected, from the culture that is perpetuated through, from the front lines, the culture that you have, the banter, the language being used, how inclusive the industry is, everything was just like falling into place. And how it impacts men as well on such a massive scale. There was so many things where I was like, if I really dedicate myself to this, I can make a difference for people. And Hawksmoor were brilliant because they just kind of went, just go with it. Like,
amazing.
Yeah, that was a long answer. Sorry.
It's a long form. We like long answers. But I think it's interesting, particularly what you bring up around that point of the lockdown. And I think I was managing a restaurant that time, and it was really hard in terms of harassment, but also from team members and like harassment amongst staff. Because it's like everyone sort of forgot how to behave in a way. And there was so much boredom, which I think contributed to it. And there was all kinds. But I think in terms of the way that people were acting, it had all been there all the time. There's just something about the like confines of lockdown and the pandemic where the behavior just rose to the surface, where people were always like a little bit like this. And then all of a sudden it was so magnified. And yeah. It became very obvious how horrible it was, even though we all knew that it had been horrible. But it was in a different way. And maybe it's because we were, I mean, for myself, for my team, we were off the floor for like 3 months or 4 months. And then you come back to work and you're like, wait a second, this sucks. This yeah. part of my job is horrible in a way that it's very hard to recognize when you're just in it every day, working hard. Like, it's hard to see.
It is hard. And I think especially the way people were behaving towards one another. I've seen it in so many different businesses. I think there was a bit of a desensitizing because of all the horrible things that were happening, the immense increase of social media use, which kind of dehumanized people so much. It was a little bit like people not really remembering how to behave. And it wasn't necessarily always bad things. It was just like we had an established relationship beforehand, a working relationship. I've gone through things during the pandemic that was really hard for me. And now my boundaries and resilience has changed. Mm. And people were really good, like sitting down and sussing those things out and how they were going to work together. But equally, like it's not that harassment is just something that customers do. Obviously, it happens in all industries between co-workers as well. And the thing with the dehumanizing thing, when you start looking at language and you start looking at banter and the culture that people are saying and how it isolates people out of the industry, it just has a massive impact. And I think people were just not thinking about what they were saying, or more importantly, they were getting away with whatever they were saying because it's only banter. And it's just sexism or whatever it may be, or racism or transphobia or homophobia. I mean, there was so much that was just coming out that people kind of just assumed were okay from the isolation and social media and everything.
It's an interesting dynamic, and I think that this has probably changed, but certainly when I was coming up as a waitress, the power dynamic in the restaurant was always this imbalance of like, we had to placate the chef because without the chef, we could not operate. Mm. And as a result, there was all kinds of little things we did to make sure that chef was a happy man. And that was taking comments on the chin. It was like sometimes being flirtatious or like being a little bit like, oh, I'm just a really dumb lady. Like, I'm sorry about the eggs, you know? So they didn't feel like somebody was like, oh, bringing up their chest to them. Like, there was so much of that from every job I had from the time I was a teenager. And it, now when I look at it, I'm like, that you're asking for trouble by propping up that dynamic. And it's so accepted. And I believe that chefs deserve loads of respect. And like, no, you can't operate without one. And they're a really important part of the team. But this idea that we're going to treat them like some kind of demigod who must be acquiesced to at all situations, and the kind of personality that might demand that, it just creates this opportunity for harassment.
Yeah, and it was something that you could see across management as well. From like a very young age on how managers were talking to people. Like, I worked with someone who once called people their minions, and it was a real power imbalance. Like, toxic working environments you can find across any and all industries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really can do that. And people weren't able to speak up because nothing was going to happen because it was the most senior people within whatever business that may be. And that's kind of what I see across the board. Is my favorite thing is, oh, he's that, or he or she, but mostly he is like that to everyone. And it was just like, okay, so we're just going to accept that this person is behaving in this way. I've worked with some incredible chefs over the years that has been nothing but wonderful and so supportive. But then I had a really bad egg once who was sexually harassing me quite intensely. And in the end, I was quite frightened to bring that up with senior management because he was really highly valued and he'd been with the company for a long time. But we're talking like groping and full on, like really bad. And then the executive chef of that place, I told him, and he just instantly sorted it out. I was like, absolutely not. This person is fired.
That's amazing. But like, why does that feel exceptional to me? I'm like, that's amazing that that's what happened. Do you know? And I think that's kind of indicative of where it is. And like, I was dealing with a chef who was just like verbally harassing and being like very, very creepy and just being the worst to all these like young waitresses who were just like trying to do their jobs. And I was general manager at the time. And I went to the owner operator and I was like, listen, like he needs to go. I'm not playing around with this. Like these women aren't coming to work and having this happen. It's not happening. And they were like, oh, you know, we need someone for the section and whatever. Da-da-da-da. And I was like, listen, it is him or me. And I work 65 hours a week. And I run your busiest shifts and I am the boss. And if he is still here on Monday, I'm not. And you decide. I was a general manager. I could throw my weight around like that because I knew that they needed me. And I knew that they would value me. But it made me, and they ultimately did the right thing and he wasn't welcome back. But I was like, one, why isn't that the immediate response? That running a section or running a pizza section is going to be more important than the literal safety of whole bunch of team members, like that one, to protect that one somehow takes precedent over that many. But also it really made me think about what happens when you're in this position and you don't have weight to throw around, where you're not a general manager, where you don't have a personal relationship with an owner, where you can't even talk to the owner. Like, it made me so aware of even in the position of power I was in, I still had to fight for it. And if you're somebody in the industry who's just more vulnerable in general, where does that leave you?
And this is something that translates across everywhere. You could see it with Russell Brand recently. Because of who he was allowed to continue on. Everyone just knew not to put on female runners to support him, sort of thing. And we've had a society that's just accepted to make exceptions for people who are deemed to be what's the word I'm looking for?
Like valuable.
Yeah, like, exactly. And that's the scary kind of bit. It's the behaviors that are being accepted over and over again, like this, just because they're very talented or we can't do without them. And
what? It's so frustrating because I'm like, there are so many funny people on TV that don't rape anyone. And like, there's so many really talented chefs that just like, don't grab anyone on the ass at work, you know? So it's like this idea that harassment is the cost of admission to having talent inside your restaurant or talent in your, on your TV. It's absurd.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things when I've been working with some of the wonderful chefs here is we have really kind people in leadership position, and that makes a difference. Our head chef in Manchester, he did this culture project as soon as he recognized that there was language that wasn't appropriate. There was like banter that was out of line. So he just initiated a full-on culture project of addressing difficult subjects with his team and talking about it and raising awareness. And he said, what I want to do is I want to make an industry where I would like my children to work.
Mm.
And I thought that was such a nice thing because I mean, I have a son who's 5 years old, and would I want him to go into hospitality? Like, I question that sometimes, but I would like it to be an industry where I go, yeah, of course you should do that. This is because it is the best industry that you can find. Mm-hmm. I think definitely working for it in that sense, because hospitality is based on hierarchy as well. So the hierarchy that you can see within hospitality is that you have the kitchen, for example, being based on military protocol. Mm. And it's also been, and you can see the difference with the new generation coming in and working in hospitality, that our generation was just like, this is part of the job. You earn your dues, like you work your way through. Yes, chef. You only did 60 hours part-timer.
We used to sling that around like, 100%. If somebody was like, 48 hours, you'd be like, okay, part-timer. Like, we used to do that constantly. It's sociopathic now that I think about it.
I mean, it doesn't create longevity because people can't work in an, like, at that pace for such a long time, and it creates a really horrible environment. And I think that's why it's important to change culture, talking about how the things that you're talking about and the culture you have in your kitchens and your front of house teams and bar teams is how you make it inclusive, because no one wants to work in an environment where they're going to be harassed.
Nobody wants to do that.
No one wants to do that. So people will look at hospitality sometimes and have like flashbacks of like the early noughties, angry chefs on TV, and just assume that, you know, going to work in hospitality is being shouted and screamed at. And we have a responsibility to change that, because we want a new generation to come in. We want parents to work in the industry. We want a long-term career. And we need to be able to change that by making it a positive, welcoming environment for all.
And I think everyone wins in that scenario. And it's often this focus of like, ooh, recruitment crisis, we have to attract people. And I'm like, I think it might also be nice to do this for the people that are already there, that have made careers out of this industry, that have put their blood, sweat, and tears and sacrificed so much time. And like, they also deserve better wages, a better work-life balance. And if coming at it from sort of a recruitment perspective is what creates change with operators, fantastic. But I wonder what do we do with the folks that have been embedded in that culture for so long and need changing, or at least support through that change?
I think it's about getting people to understand the benefits of making a change, because that's one of the things that I try to always talk about, is women's safety doesn't just impact women, it impacts men as well. And men are put in this horrible position where they have to, where they're not allowed to talk about their feelings, where they are part of this band. I've seen examples of it where you have a table of men all being belittling another man and putting him in a really awkward position. Because it's just banter and culture and this fear of speaking up and being part of making a change. And it has such a negative impact on men and on their mental health. And I don't think anyone wants to work 60 hours a week and being shouted at, regardless of gender. I think we want it to be a more welcoming environment. We want it to be more flexibility. We want fathers to be able to spend time with their children, because that has a massive impact on the children's mental health and benefits, and as well as on the fathers. But often that's completely taken out of consideration because of these gender stereotype roles and what is available in terms of family leave. And it's not for nothing that the most common cause of death for men under 45 is suicide. So I think to get buy-in to make a change of having a more positive environment, it's understanding the benefits. Like, we all come with the same, with our own box, and our box is our experience and what we see. And we make decision based on that experience of what is being shown to us and what we're putting out there. So, for example, there's this pool close to where I live in Deptford where they do a women's night on Tuesdays. So just for women to go swimming. And I was like, brilliant, I'll go to that. That sounds lovely. And I got there and I felt so naive, because there's a massive Somali and Muslim community around Deptford. And this was the only night of the week that they are able to use the pool. And that didn't even cross my mind that would be a reason why you would have a women's only night, because it's not an obstacle that's been put in front of me. So when you're constantly making decisions just based on your own limited box, you're not seeing creative solutions, and you're not improving your business, because you're just having like these blindfolds on this is my experience and this is how I think it would be better. But by having a happier working environment, more people want to come in and join. You have more experiences. You have more ideas.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what Culture Bar is all about and how you came around to founding it?
So I was doing this training at Hawksmoor, and people started talking about it a little bit to other businesses. So I started getting requests if I could come and do the same training for them. And then more and more people were kind of saying, oh, we have the same problem. Can you set up more workshops? So I was like, yeah, I would love to do that. And I set up Culture Bar to kind of be able to share it with more businesses and have more of a tangible impact. A lot of that came just from word of mouth to other hospitality businesses, but also because of the work through the Women's Night Safety Charter. People were hearing me doing talks, etc. for them. But Culture Bar, it's something that for me, I think, will just help and improve the industry and have a bigger outreach and create a bigger and bigger world of nice places to work. And that's all I kind of want to do.
Are there things that feel sort of like universally experienced by everyone you trained? Like something that literally every single person is like, oh yeah, that I know about that. That's an experience I've had, or that's an experience I've seen.
Yeah, I think the saddest one is the when women share stories about horrible things that happened to them, but not the ultimate horror has occurred. Mm. Is they always send their stories with, I was so lucky.
Mm.
And I find that hits really hard, that we are all experience the right amount of panic, which is that we are constantly expecting something that may happen to us. And it will happen to nearly all women. It also happens to men, of course, but we are all expecting it at some point. And as long as we get away with just a bit of harassment, a bit of groping, and a bit of whatever happens, as long as it's not the ultimate, everyone goes, I was so lucky. I find that so sad. And quite sobering. I feel often as well with men in the room is that they are aware that there is an issue, but not to that level. So you have women sitting and nodding along and going, yeah. We know. whereas men are like, oh my God, that's so uncomfortable, because we all talk about it. We will unironically send a screenshot of our Bumble date saying, I'm going on a date with this person to this place. If I get murdered, revenge me. But it's something that we've just grown up to accept and just have as part of our day-to-day life. I find that that's sort of the universal reaction to it. I love when I have these trainings with just men in the room, because they are so keen to learn and wanting to be part of the solution, but not quite knowing how to get involved, and for them to understand the impact it has on them as well. And the responsible bystander part of the training is something that often is like, oh, I want to know more about that. Men are also subjected to harassment in hospitality, and many times they go, oh, it's just really uncomfortable, and they don't feel like talking about it as much. It's interesting when they start having conversation about the power dynamic. Someone was telling a story about how she had gone outside for a break on shift, and the customer came up and asked for the number, and she was saying, oh, that was terrifying. And this man was like, why, that's really nice, I'd love for someone to ask me my number. And another man just stepped in and he was like, yes, but you have to think about the power imbalance of you being a man and what that means. And it's so great to see how these conversations happen. And I love seeing people wanting to do something to change and educate one another.
And I mean, it reminds me of what you were saying before, of that idea of how you're viewing experiences and changes through your own box, and successfully in trainings, what you can facilitate is that everyone sort of passes their box around.
Yeah.
And so by the end, you're all looking through everyone's perspective. and how much we can learn from each other in that environment.
It's brilliant because I always ask this question, what precautions do you take to get home safe? Women across the room goes, I take a longer route home. I make sure that it's lit. If I'm in an Uber, I make sure I'm sharing my location. I'm speaking to someone on the phone. I have the keys between my fingers. I have a rape alarm when I walk my dog. I have my headphones in, but no music on so that I can hear what's going on, but no one's going to talk to me. And men go, oh, I just kind of
I walk home.
I
wait for the light. Like,
yeah, exactly. And obviously men are attacked at a different rate, but it's also men attacking men. And it's interesting because it's like that, not all men. It's like, yes, no, we're very, very, very grateful for that. Can you imagine how horrifying that would be if it was all men? But it's, right? It would be terrifying.
Yeah.
And I like the mayor's campaign, say mate to mate. I love that because it is so powerful on how you call out friends for problematic behavior. Mm. And it's one of the things that women has on the top of their wish list of how men can help being part of the conversation. It's like, call your mates out. Tell them, like, no, that's not okay.
Are there... I don't know if I want to say easy changes, but are there simple changes that operators can make in the industry to create a safer culture that you don't see being executed? And you're like, wow, you could literally just do X, Y, Z and you would see an immediate shift.
Easy is always a difficult thing to say, right? Everything you have to do takes time and sometimes money. But what would make a clear difference is that, number one, that you do preventative stuff. Like, we have a policy in place so we know what to do when something happens. If something happens to you, you report it to this person. We will help you and look after you. But it's also when you join, you go through, when you join any sort of business, they go, this is where you put the dishes. This is where all the recipes are. This is where you find, hopefully they say this, this is where you find the policies. But it's introducing, we have a zero tolerance for harassment here. It's not acceptable. And just having that conversation at a very, like, on the first day and setting out that these are the rules of working here. These are the expectations. Yeah. Because it will create a more safe environment. And that doesn't have to cost a lot. It's just adding it to your checklist when you induct someone. We do here, we have 30 minutes of induction on our induction day. And I'm aware that a lot of businesses do not have the money and capacity to do induction days. But we do a half an hour training with everyone that joins the business, which talks about language and banter and culture and diversity, inclusion, harassment, bullying, just to make it really clear, this is not acceptable here. And it's not acceptable
for coworkers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not acceptable from customers. Another easy thing that businesses can do is to understand that the customer isn't always right and to kind of go, okay, do we want that type of customer here? I love when our GMs, like, they call out behaviors by calling up customers the day after and go, the way you behaved is not acceptable. You can't come into our restaurants behaving like that. I think those are things that will make a difference. Expectations of customers and clear boundaries when you join.
Feeling that, like, my workplace where I... you know, bring my best and I make sacrifices for and I come and I hustle, that they are going to think about my well-being and my safety above money.
Yeah.
And that I am worth more to them than the $200 they'd make on that table if they'd let them stay and harass me. And I think that, I mean, that anecdote I brought up before about having to, like, threaten to quit for someone to get fired who was being harassy. It's like...
harassy.
You know, but it's like the feeling that I walked away with, and I think a lot of people in hospitality will identify this, is that, oh, I am not important to them, is their bottom line. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's about my physical safety, my emotional safety, the fact that it's my wife's birthday. Like, there isn't a thing here where I get put before the bottom line of this business. Even though to be good in hospitality, you have to give so much of yourself. And I think it's such an amazing if you can create a culture where it's not just the behavior of the staff with each other, but it's behavior of the customers and your expectations of them, and that willingness to really back your team when they are telling you that they don't feel safe, that changes everything.
Yeah.
Like,
we have a high staff turnover in hospitality. It costs a lot of money to recruit someone. It costs a lot of money to train someone up. So it's smart business to want people to stay. So the loss of money elsewhere by not accepting that customer behavior is being massively saved by having a higher staff retention.
What are the biggest challenges that you've found working in women's safety training in hospitality specifically?
I think when whoever asked me to come and do a training are already like half in.
On board, yeah.
Yeah, they're on board. They want to do it. So they're... That's the easy one. I think that the hardest issue is when there is maybe one or two people from a business coming to the training, and it's hard for them to go back and make tangible changes, doing it by themselves. That's one thing that I'm conscious about. It often has the greatest impact when you have a lot of people from the same place, but it depends on who that person is who comes by themselves, right? If it's someone who is in a position of making changes, then it can still have a massive impact. Another challenge is obviously time and money. Like, our industry has very slim margins. And I think oftentimes, like, there's good intentions and wanting things to happen. But the difference with hospitality with a lot of other industries is that we physically have to be present.
Mm-hmm.
It's if I'm sick one day, Oxmoor's going to be fine. Like, nothing's going to happen to it. But you do need to have X amount of people to do operate. The bar.
Yeah.
To operate. Yeah, you need to do that. And the issue is finding the time to get people out to do training. And I completely understand that to be a great challenge.
If you could make one universal change that magically got implemented in every single hospitality business in the country, what would that change be?
I would actually say that there is training happening in every single site. Mm. They have just introduced this legislation happening now, which is that the employer is responsible in a different way to preventing sexual harassment. So businesses do have to take that into account now, that they are actively working to prevent it. And I'd like to see that happening, just training on how to deal with things. I think it will make such a big impact on people feeling safe, enjoying coming to work, and it will change the culture of things for customers as well. You do not have the right to come into my restaurant where I work and behave like this. This is my workspace. I don't come to your work. Imagine that. Just like, hey, and come and sexually harass you at your little desk
cubicle.
Yeah, a little cubicle. So yeah, I think that would magically make things better.
Mm-hmm. It would make it an industry where we wanted our kids to work.
Yeah, it would.
I think it can take, working in women's safety, anything to do with gender takes a lot of energy and a lot of optimism, particularly in the climate of the past 5 years. And also, honestly, just the life lived as a woman, I think. Like, the weight of that can be very heavy, particularly as you're advocating for change in a patriarchal system, in a hierarchical system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you create circumstances sort of for yourself to keep doing this work and being able to do it and take care of your mental health?
I think the thing that really pushes me is that the feedback is overwhelmingly positive. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of energy from having these conversations with people, because you meet people who have like light bulb moments and go, oh my God, yes, I can make a change here. And that energy just makes such a difference in me wanting to continue to do it. Mm-hmm. It gives me opportunity to have difficult conversations with people who don't agree, because often we find ourselves in spaces where we surround ourselves with people who are like-minded and we're all just patting each other on the back and going, like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, you're right. You're right. But I love that I get to see so many people and have all these conversations, and you can see like a light and people going, oh yes, this something can change. And that gives me the energy.
And do you ever get home and scream into your pillow or?
I think, unfortunately, working in a space that can be quite dark, you do get a bit desensitized from it. And I do have to kind of pocket things. And you go, oh, I've been talking about femicide today. You kind of have to be able to
compartmentalize.
Yeah, and step out of it. Even when bad things happen and when people do bad things, as long as at the end I feel like there's a consequence that's happened and it feels rough, but there has been, for lack of a better word, justice. I think that really helps me to keep going as well. But I believe in change. I believe that people want to change. I believe that when people see that this is beneficial for all, then I feel quite optimistic about it, even though it's a dark space.
I think that's really beautiful. Quick fire questions. Where is your favorite place to travel food-wise?
France, Paris.
Who is your favorite pop icon?
Probably Divine.
What's the best meal that you've had in the past month?
My friend's bolognese that he cooked for me the other week.
There's something about when you go to somebody's apartment and they give you a bowl of spaghetti bolognese, it's unmatched. I've never felt, it's like getting a gentle kiss on the forehead.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing more. It's so loving. What is your favorite building in London?
I do like the Horniman Museum as a building.
What's in the what kind of museum is it?
It's a taxidermy museum, but
love that.
I know. And it's got a massive walrus that's been there for like 200 years. And they also do different exhibitions from cultures all over the world. And there's a little Swedish section where they have a crayfish party set up, which is really nice. And they do like Lego exhibitions and dinosaur exhibitions. There's like a butterfly room. There's an aquarium. There's a massive garden. I mean, it's brilliant.
I've literally just started this in my phone. I will be going.
It's great. I highly recommend it. Don't go on a weekend.
I would never do that.
Don't. Or half term.
I would never. Although sometimes I forget that it's half term because I don't have children. And then I go somewhere and I think to myself, what, like, first circle of hell am I in? And then I remember it's a school break.
Yeah.
I should start putting them in my calendar so I can avoid.
I have them in mine. I can share them with you.
Well, I mean, thank God you do. Otherwise,
no one would have your son.
Famously. Okay. Our last question, you can take a little bit more time with, but we always like to ask, who is your hospitality hero? And this might be somebody that you know. It might be somebody that you've worked with. It might be somebody you've never met, but just admired from afar. It can be someone whose food you just find exciting. It can be somebody that you think is just sort of kick-ass. Anyone that you look to and you're like,
Angela Hartnett. I find her incredibly inspiring. I'm also in awe of Karen Easton. She's a very cool woman. I'm working with Queena Wong at the moment, who does Curious Vines, and I'm loving the space and the energy of what she's doing for women in wine.
I don't want to be cutthroat, but you have to pick one to receive the honor of hospitality hero.
Shit. Okay. I would say Angela Hartnett. What she's been able to achieve in her space and being a Michelin star chef and all the work that she has done, it's just, she's creating conversations that are brilliant. And she's also worked with Madeleine Geesh, who does the Good Life Coach. Just seeing how vulnerable she is about talking about things is also very, very inspiring. All the things that she's done, and she's just continuously making incredible food. And yeah.
If people want to find you, what's the best way for them to do it?
can find me on Instagram and direct message me there at culturebar.uk, or email me as well.
You can also always get in touch with Kelly's cause if you're already in touch with us, and we are always happy to connect you with Sophia, who's a huge champion of what we do, and we are such a big fan of her. Sophia, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Beyond the Pass is produced by Kelly's Cause. For more information about Kelly's Cause, please head to kellyscause.com or find us on Instagram at kellyscause.